I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnnHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality, your daily dose of constitutional truth, news with principle, not based on party, which is going to be very important today because today, as promised, is a special edition of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. We're going to be covering the confirmation questions for Brett Kavanaugh that you should hear. I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. I say should hear. Do you think we will hear?
Yeah, I was just thinking the title could be Questions You Won't Hear.
Right. I almost had that come out of my mouth. So just as a brief summary, Mitch McConnell has promised that Kavanaugh will be confirmed by October 1 for the new court session. I am always curious how they make those kind of guarantees. I remember Mitch McConnell, when Barack Obama was no longer up for election, when it was before we knew who was going to be the presidential candidate, Mitch McConnell, and we covered this on the show, Mitch McConnell said that we will, sort of like a hot mic thing, but it was actually an interview with CBS. He said, we will have a very active Congress when our president is in office, meaning that the Republicans will have a president in the next election. And it was not like wishful thinking or hopeful thinking. He was saying it like it was a matter of fact.
Think the fix was in?
No, I think the fix is always in. Not with who will be president, but what party will be president, mm-hmm. right? Because I always tell people, look at Wikipedia, right? Go look at Wikipedia at the presidents over the last 50, 60 years. You'll see the trend. Republican, Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican, Democrat. When you got a two-party system, you know, roulette's out the door.
Could it demonstrate the fickleness of the American voter? Like, we don't know what we believe?
I believe that there are many, many different aspects going on here. But the thing that still bothers me is the fact that we're trapped in this two-party paradigm, and they seem to have, you know, I'll have it this time, you'll have it next time, we'll trade it off kind of thing. And yeah. it just bothers me. But nonetheless, Mitch McConnell promises that Kavanaugh will be confirmed by October 1st. And I just wanted to say, just sort of go through the roles here. So what we have is 47 Republicans who support or lean towards supporting Kavanaugh. We have 41 Democrats who lean towards opposing or oppose. And then we've got this sort of 12 in the middle that's, you know, the sort of up in the air. And all the pundits are saying that Murkowski and Collins are our swings that we need to look for.
Yeah. I think it's 11. I don't think Rand Paul's up in the air.
No, I don't think so either. But he is. I think they say that because, you know, he always has his reservations, especially about Fourth Amendment issues. And Kavanaugh has Fourth Amendment problems.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at this. Jeff Flake. Is Jeff Flake a Republican?
Yeah. Normally.
He's not running for election in 2018.
No, he's a big anti-Trumper, I think.
Yeah, so I think that's probably why he's on the fence. And
yeah, I don't buy that either.
No. He's a party guy no matter what happens, I think. But anyway, here we go. We have 12 that are on the fence. 11 because Rand Paul's probably not on the fence, actually.
Yeah, the only, honestly, the only ones that matter are the Republicans.
Right.
I don't see you getting any of these other guys. Heitkamp, maybe Heitkamp.
Well, Murkowski is a total establishment Republican.
Yeah, she's not going to.
She's not going to buck the system.
Yeah, I don't think so.
She'll do exactly what the party wants her to do. We know about Murkowski because our friend Jeff Miller ran against her.
Yeah.
And that was a despicable election for the Republicans.
I think
in
Collins for sure could be up in the air.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, she's liberal Republican kind of place.
Yeah, because Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota and Joe Manchin from West Virginia are both up for re-election. Even McCaskill, maybe, but I don't think so. But I think those are possible. Bill Nelson, no way.
So let me
Bill
ask
Nelson's
you this:
not going to vote for
Bill Nelson.
Kavanaugh.
Are you kidding me? Even though he is up for re-election, let me ask you this.
Well, and again, it's Florida. It's a swing state, and he's North Florida is a big key for him. But I don't know. Who knows?
So
if he thinks he needs North Florida, then yeah, I guess it's in the realm of possibility.
Well, let me ask you this question, because this is how I looked at it from initial: is that hey, these guys are up for re-election. Being Democrat and up for re-election means that you will have to oppose Kavanaugh. Do you think that
the other
side might be true?
Yeah, that's not true in every case. Bill Nelson, for instance, it's a matter of that state. Again, each of these: North Dakota, Florida, West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
Indiana for Joe Donnelly are, you know, fairly conservative states. Some more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, Bill Nelson, our guy in Florida. You know, if they kind of see that they have a lock just with Florida and they've locked down the I-4 corridor and he doesn't need North Florida, or they don't feel like he needs North Florida, then no way. He's a no vote. But, you know, so it depends on what they think's going on in their election. And the thing about it is, some of these folks like Nelson are not particularly principled people, so it's a political decision, you know. So I mean, if you knew what a guy believed and he's not going to change that, then you could say, okay, here's how he's going to vote. A lot of these are not they're not like that.
My new friend I met in the grocery store is not going to be real happy if he listens to this show and finds out that you think Mr. Nelson is not very principled.
I don't think on
political issues.
I don't think in regards to this decision is what I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad, terrible guy and has no principles. That's not what I mean. What I mean is some of these things are not crucial principles for mm-hmm. them personally, and
right.
I don't think that's how Bill Nelson would be deciding this. I think he would look at where he stands politically, and so you know, and again, Bill Nelson is not the typical, you know, raving leftist Democrat, super radical. I mean,
he's
liberal.
He's hard party Democrat for
yeah.
sure. Establishment.
Yeah, no question.
Democrat.
But he's from conservative North Florida. He represents a conservative area, and so
you know, politics means so much. Politics have such a different meaning on the local level, even from
right.
the federal perspective. The senator that was there before Bill Nelson, his name's Graham. What was his name? Do you remember? I want to say
Bill Graham.
Was it Bill Graham? I want to say Bill, but it just sort of sounded weird because
yeah.
it was Bill Nelson. Do you remember
Phil Graham.
No, it wasn't Phil.
It was Phil Graham.
No, I don't think so. I'll have to look it up. But do you remember that he was the guy who went to bat for me when the VA was giving me the the cold shoulder with my service-connected disability.
Yeah, that was not Phil Grimm.
No. Yeah. So.
No, it was somebody else.
But
that
his
was
last
Rod.
No, his name was Graham, but I'll look it
Maybe.
Up just to
Who
make
knows?
Sure.
There have been several. So these guys, you know, it depends
Bob
on.
Bob Graham.
Bob Graham, yeah. It
Bob
depends
Graham.
On their, you know, the state and what's going on in their race. So that's what they're looking at. So that's why you got this list of 12. I don't think some, like I said, are as up in the air as you think, because particularly some of the Republicans, at least two out of three of the Republicans, and they think, okay, these guys could vote with the Democrats. I don't see that happening. I could be wrong. I'm no expert. I don't know the future, but I don't think so.
Well, we're going through the Judiciary Committee at the moment, and not to mention the private meetings that they're having with Kavanaugh. And I was looking at the Judiciary Committee and their members, with the Republicans being Grassley and Hatch and Graham and Cornyn and Lee and Cruz. We got Sasse, we got Flake, Crapo, Tillis, and John Kennedy from Louisiana.
Yeah, there's some good Republicans on there. Yeah. There's a couple of flakes, no pun intended, and then there's some loons on the Democrat side.
Can I
for
confess
sure.
that something that might make some people upset? I cannot look at Ted Cruz without thinking of that show on Showtime.
Yeah. he's one of the ones. I mean, you know,
he's going to be
some
pretty
of these solid,
solid
votes. I think most of these on the Republican side are solid, particularly on the committee.
But they've got some real crazy lunatics on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
You've got, just looking at this, you've got
Feinstein,
Cory Booker, Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Where do the Democrats find these people?
The Communist Party.
Oh, I don't think, but you see.
Communist Party USA.
Right. Is that the further definition? Communist Party USA means also clinically unstable, mentally insane? Because I don't think you have to be crazy to be a communist. I believe you can be misled, you can be ideological, you can be naive, but you don't have to be stinking crazy. Some of these people are just bat crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Some of it's the Trump derangement syndrome, but a lot of them were crazy before he ever showed up.
Oh, well, you know, if it wasn't Trump, it'd be somebody else. So here we go. We're going to get into these questions. Now, I've drawn up just 9 questions. I don't know if we'll get it to all 9, but I've drawn up just 9 questions, and I think that will help us understand the questions that you ought to be hearing from the Senate Judiciary Committee and from the confirmation hearing, but probably will not hear. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, your daily dose of constitution, of principle, of liberty over security. And we give this to you in hopes that maybe it will breed a new trend in media, that we will stop having fake news and party-driven agendas broadcast through our media. And so here we are, our special edition of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. And in this special edition, we are going to be touching the questions that you ought to be hearing at the confirmation hearing from the Judiciary Committee, or whoever's going to be asking questions to Kavanaugh for his confirmation. Now, remember, we're promised this is going to happen before October, but I believe they'll probably wait as long as they can. And so here's in my line of questions, and, you know, we should also give like a brief explanation as to the answer, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So what's your first question that you would ask if you were sitting there?
And this is my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. I forgot to introduce him in this section. So my first question, do you support the understanding that the Constitution is a compact between the states? Explain your answer.
Okay.
You know, what's interesting is because the federal supremacists do not support the fact that the Constitution is a compact. They call it the compact, are you ready for this, theory.
Right. And so what does that mean, that it's a compact?
Well, the Constitution being a compact means that it's an agreement between sovereign governments. That's what a compact is, an agreement between sovereign governments, a contract between sovereign governments.
Isn't a treaty an agreement between sovereign governments? What's
yes.
the difference
well,
between that and a compact?
Well, there really isn't much difference, actually, because the treaty is a contract as well. And that was part of the reason why treaties had to be not simply made by the president, but confirmed by the Senate as well, because it creates a contractual agreement between the United States and these United States and foreign governments with the same kind of obligation. So a compact, the Constitution as a compact, is not an agreement between foreign governments, but an agreement between each of the states that creates the federal government. And what's important is that this is not a theory. This is actually how the Constitution was created to be. James Madison said, I mean, our founders called it a compact over and over again, and it really sort of baffles me how people with an education, a high dollar education and lots of cult of personality worship, cult of expert worship, call this a theory when the founders told us exactly what it was. James Madison says, the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants enumerated in the compact, and that in the case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose.
That's the quote I would, that's how I would phrase the question.
Right.
Do you agree with this
James
statement? No, I wouldn't say James Madison.
Right.
I just make the statement. Do you agree with this statement? And that's how I would.
Yeah, that's good.
Want to know it.
That's good. You know, this month we're going to be putting up a class at Liberty First University.
And then I'd probably pick a part. I said, do you specifically agree with this part? I would quote
right.
a certain, I would pick out the different parts and like that it's a compact and then mm-hmm. that the states are duty bound to interpose.
And that the states are the parties
right.
to the compact. Now
yeah.
we're going to be putting up a class at Liberty First University this month where you're teaching about creating arguments.
Yeah. So then when if he says no at any point, that's when I would then you identify who said it. Then you
right.
say, so sir, you believe that James Madison, the father of the Constitution, is mistaken about
or perhaps
this
lying.
Document or lying.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, I would probably say, so which do you believe? Was James Madison, the father of the Constitution, mistaken, or was he lying?
Right, right. That's good. See, you got to go to libertyfirstuniversity.com and get this instruction on how to create a persuasive argument,
yeah,
right?
By using questions,
right. So here
that's
we go.
That's really a trap.
It is, but it's supposed to be a trap
mm-hmm.
because the trap is in the mind. We have to make people think mm-hmm. on their own, right? Instead of giving them information. We'll be right back.
As there again, men tear up our Constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution, standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth. The love of our country as our ammunition.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. I am Chris Ann Hall. I have with me my husband and co-host, JC Hall. And that bumper that you just heard was our good friend, Jordan Page. And I just sort of want to shout out to Jordan because he is an amazing patriot. If you've not heard Jordan Page's music, go find him on YouTube because he is just, he is so on point and just a brilliant, beautiful singer and songwriter. We're doing our special edition of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. And this special edition is the questions that you won't but should hear at the Kavanaugh confirmation. And question number two to my for my husband and co-host JC Hall, do you support the understanding that the intent of the drafters of the Constitution is essential to the meaning of the Constitution? Explain your answer.
Right.
Was that a good way to ask that question, I wonder?
Yeah.
I like the idea of giving a quote. Right.
Yeah, I would probably sort. I mean, you. I would probably lead into it a little more open ending.
Uh-huh.
Where do you believe? To you know, where is the primary place to look
for
to understand the meaning of the Constitution?
The intent, the meaning of the Constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because there's so much,
just...
so much reliance on precedent, and then you can bring in the intent. And find a quote about that, but
I was really trying to stay away from the yes or no questions because I didn't want a yes or no question. That's why I sort of ended that up with the explain your answer. But we have here in Federalist 78 a quote by Alexander Hamilton, who's talking about the Constitution being the standard and the duty of the judiciary. He says, the courts of justice, whose duty it must be to declare all acts contrary to the manifest tenor of the Constitution void.
Right.
That means specifically the intent of the drafters.
Yeah.
So maybe I could phrase that as a question and say, Mr. Kavanaugh, do you agree that it is the duty of the courts of justice to declare all acts contrary to the manifest tenor of the Constitution to be void? That would be a great question, wouldn't it?
Sure.
Because then you would be, then you're back in that thing where you say, okay, was Hamilton lying or was he wrong kind of thing, right? Okay, question number three. Do you believe that the Constitution gives plenary power to any branch of the federal government? Explain
yeah.
your answer.
I like that topic. Because
yeah.
that's just so common,
right?
You know, it's just really incredible the assertion that some branch of government the Constitution grants some branch of government complete, unlimited, unchecked power.
Yeah. By the way, that's what plenary means.
Right.
Is complete, unchecked. And here's the thing, because that kind of is a trap question. Because yes or no? Because then if he says yes. Then you
have a litany of quotes.
Right.
So
exactly.
Do you believe Madison was wrong here?
Yeah.
Was Hamilton lying here?
Right.
Was Jefferson an idiot here?
I know, right? But if he says no, then he has to, on the record, disagree with about 60% of the Supreme Court opinions that have been issued since 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really great because that's part of the questions that were coming up. James Madison wrote, for the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced construction of the constitutional charter which defines them so as to destroy the meaning and effect of particular enumeration, the obvious tendency and inevitable result would be to transform the present Republican system of the United States into an absolute or at best mixed monarchy. And I think it's amazing because our founders, like you said, there's a whole litany of things
in that quote. If any branch has plenary power, then their powers are not defined.
Right.
Which is what he just said.
Right. I love this one by Hamilton in Federalist 83. He says, an affirmative grant of special powers would be absurd as well as useless if a general authority was intended.
Yeah, so that's what you do. Do you believe that any branch of the federal government has plenary or general authority?
Right.
Plenary power or
right,
general authority.
Right.
Paraphrase that with his words.
Question number four. Do you believe the Supreme Court is part of the federal government and therefore limited and defined by the specifically enumerated powers of the Constitution? Explain your answer. That's a difficult one, I think, for a Supreme Court justice. Because I put it on...
Well, they're going to say yes.
Yeah. And then what you do is you bring up... I would then bring up Supreme Court case, you know, quotes. Because we have... I started picking up a history of Ginsburg's opinions, where she's written the majority of the opinions, and I've been reading them. And it's absolutely amazing how often Ginsburg believes that the only limit to federal power is, number one, what the court says its limit is, and number two, whatever USC she can divine up to limit that power.
Yeah, so that's how you phrase that. You want to get them talking. So, you know, you would want to ask them, in what way do you believe the Supreme Court is limited?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, there you go. Here we go. Question number five. Do you support the ideology that the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of the Constitution and the only means to overturn a court opinion is through the court itself?
Yeah, so that's an easy one. I would say, who is the ultimate arbiter of the Constitution? Mm-hmm. And then you have the quote.
Yeah.
You've already quoted that, where Madison says the states are the ultimate arbiter. I mean, you can't get more clear than that. I mean, that's
right.
Verbatim what he said. And
right.
These guys don't believe that. So again, do you believe Madison is lying here or mistaken?
And then you also have Jefferson saying that his greatest fear is the federal judiciary expanding its power.
That'd be
that
a good that'd be a good question.
Yeah.
What sir is your in out of all of the branches mm-hmm. of the federal government.
Right.
What would be your greatest fear? What branch would you fear the most to encroach upon the liberties of the people?
Yeah, that's great.
Then you could
great.
Slide Jefferson in there.
Right.
Here's what, you know, appreciate your answer. Here's Jefferson's fear.
Right.
And then, you know, the courts. What do you think about that?
Right.
You know, what do you think about Jefferson's fear? Do you think that's legitimate? And if so, if not, why? If so, in what way?
I have a two-part question that I didn't put on the list. I would ask him, do you believe that the Constitution supports judicial lifetime appointments?
Yeah. Again, open-ended instead of yes or no. For how long is a Supreme Court justice, how long does a Supreme Court justice occupy his term of office?
Right. Right. So then the answer becomes lifetime, right?
Yeah.
Or based on good behavior.
Yeah, that's when you say, so there's no qualification? So lifetime without qualification?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's one.
No matter what?
And that would be a follow-up to this one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that it's appropriate for people and representatives of the people to criticize or question a federal judge's motives, integrity, honesty, or independence?
Right. Good one.
I mean, seriously,
I like that, one.
That would be a great one.
Basically means, are you accountable or unaccountable?
Right, exactly.
Are you supposed to be accountable to people or not?
The crazy thing is, you know, we have at Liberty First University, we also have this class on DVD, the judiciary class that I teach. And this judiciary class is just jam-packed with quotes that would answer, or at least, like you said, create these situations where you'd have to say, is Brutus lying or is he, you know, right? Seriously. And I think that before we have these confirmation hearings, every single American needs to have this judiciary class in their hand. We got to figure out a way to get that.
Number six, I'm going to tell you this, how I would ask number six.
This
one.
Okay.
Because they're gonna just sort of go straight at it. So I would ask, and this obviously this topic's gonna come up. So
right.
I would say
that's
in this
why
way,
I put it in there because
I
knew.
Would say, sir, do you believe that Roe versus Wade is a valid law?
Ah.
That's how I would ask that. Because obviously it's no law at all.
It's no law at all.
Supreme Court
Woo-hoo!
Opinion.
See, this is why you got to go get JC's class on creating the argument. See, he's much better at this than I am. I was trained in the judiciary, which creates a situation where you have to have yes or no answers,
single
right?
Answer. Single
you,
answer.
We don't want open-ended questions. So my brain is still geared. I can't wait to take this class on creating the argument. I think it'll make me better. But anyway, that's great. Do you believe that Roe v. Wade is
a valid law?
Woo! That gave me like goosebumps. I'm all excited about that.
Yeah, because the error is in the statement, right? Because
part of
the, you know, so the technique of at getting at this thing, sort of debate, argumentation, you know, in some situations you already, well, in most situations, you already know the error in the topic and the error in your opponent's stance. So if you can, you know, place that in your question in such a way as to spotlight it and draw them into that, right? That that becomes what you have. You're basically making them defend that, which you already know it's not defensible. and so you give them an opportunity. What it does, it opens up follow-up questions. It opens you up for discussion and being able to sort of target that issue.
Question number 7. Would you hesitate to render an opinion contrary to precedent if you feel you had evidence to show that precedent is inconsistent with the Constitution?
Yeah, because that needs to be a big topic, the issue of precedent and how they deal with precedent. And actually, I think it will, because in light of the Roe v. Wade hysteria on the left, you're going to have a discussion about precedent and how they deal with it. So you'll hear him talking about, I guarantee you, just like the other said, you'll hear him talk about precedent. Now, I thought Gorsuch's answer was good, and I expect Kavanaugh to say something similar. And, you know, some of the Democrats at that time were satisfied. In fact, he got some of the Democrat votes. You know, but basically their standard answer is, you know, I'm not going to decide any case that's not in front of me right now. You know, I don't know the facts of the case. I can't decide some hypothetical case, whatever. And they'll say,
yeah,
you know, I respect precedent, or I believe that precedent is a valid part of judicial decision and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even that's part of our attorney training, too, is don't deal with hypotheticals. We'll be right back.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the final segment of our Chris Ann Hall special edition Daily Journal. Questions you should but probably won't hear at the Kavanaugh confirmation.
I know you want to get through the last few questions. I want to mention, go back to precedent thing. I think a good way to, because it needs to be dealt with, but you're probably going to get, as I said, sort of the standard lines. I tell you how I would broach the precedent issue. I would take an example such as Korematsu.
Right, Korematsu.
The internment of Japanese American. So I would lead off. I would say, I want to ask you about precedent. So you already set the stage, right? He already has the idea of this is what I'm supposed to say, because he's going to basically say, I support precedent, right? That's already his answer. So you prime him. That's already waiting in the chute. Then you hit him with something that contradicts that. So I would say, I want to ask you now about precedent. And then that's in his mind. And you say, in 19 blah, 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 the Supreme Court decided that was okay to imprison people based upon their race. Of course, you're familiar with that case. It's blah, blah,
Korematsu.
Blah.
Korematsu v. U.S.
Right. And so given what you believe about precedent, how does the Korematsu decision, by the way, that still stands, how does that fit into your reasoning and your position about following precedent?
That is great. That is awesome. That is really, really good. You know, we talk about precedent.
You could even drop Dred Scott in there.
Right.
You know, now
there's lots of.
So you mentioned the Korematsu, and then, of course, you say, you know, you're familiar with that case. And it's similar to a Dred Scott decision where Supreme Court said black men were property. Anyway.
Right.
So then
right,
that's
right,
how
right,
you
right.
do that. You set them up because the he's going to want to be pro-president because he wants to get the Dems' support. He wants to get past that Roe v. Wade thing.
Now, if I were there...
Not that I'm trying to get him not confirmed, but, right, but, you know, it's a teaching moment. And I think one of the things that this is a great opportunity to inject some of these issues into the American consciousness,
right,
because they need to think about these things.
You know, and I just want to be clear here. I'm not for nor am I against Kavanaugh. I am for a constitutional confirmation process, right? We need to get out of our heads that this is a political process. This is something that needs to be eradicated, and I mean that, eradicated from the brains of Americans. We need to extirpate the idea that this is a political process. We don't need a conservative justice any more than we need a liberal justice. And what these confirmation questions, I hope, are getting at is a constitutional candidate.
Well, I think he gets through. But about the precedent, the way that we broach the precedent issue, that would also put the Democrats under the gun, because they're going to be pressing him about, you got to support precedent, you got to support precedent. If you inject into the conversation these other precedents, such as Dred Scott, such as Korematsu, then you also put the Democrats in the position of having to defend that. Okay, you want this guy to follow precedent. What are you saying? We should still believe black men are property. We should still think it's okay to imprison people because of their race. So if you're constitutional, I mean, that's what you're saying. Have a constitutional hearing. So if you're constitutional, you basically put them all in a position of having to follow, because there's nothing wrong with any constitutional principles. If they're following liberty, then they're right.
Right.
And so you put them in a position of having to answer for that.
I would love to have the opportunity to ask a real legal question that goes to the Roe v. Wade issue is something like, how do you support, do you support a court that finds that corporations are people, but a child in the womb is not?
Right.
So that's what I...
So the next one about states being bound to congressional laws. So
yeah, I don't want to put those in the same question because we're running out of time, but do you believe that the states are bound by all laws and regulations created by Congress and are bound by all opinions rendered by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so I'd say, can you think of any laws that would be passed by Congress that states would not have to follow?
And, okay.
And in what way do you think the states can, let's say, how much do the states have to follow when the Supreme Court gives a decision?
Obviously, there are lots and lots of questions that we could cover, and we don't have time. But I want to thank you for joining us for this special edition of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. God bless you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Let me know.